Hello and welcome to another podcast from A View from the Bullens. Grab yourself a coffee. We've got a full house today with myself, Mick Kemp, Lee McLean, Mark Mordecai, Carl McKenna, and our special guest today, journalist and author Richard Buxton. Guys, we're through to the fourth round of the FA Cup after a 2-1 win after extra time over Rotherham United. Lee, it could have been so much worse, and we're very lucky to be through, aren't we?
Lucky, to say the least, Mick, yeah. Could have been very different yesterday. An awful performance overall, aside from probably your first 10, 15 minutes when we looked okay and we were on the front foot. It all just went to pieces after about 15 minutes, and Rotherham with a better side. On another day, we would have went out. I think better opposition, we would have went out. Don't think we took them seriously enough. There was one or two that didn't look fit, Dina being one of them. All in all, mate, I don't think anyone will have been singing Adele in the changes after that performance. You're really struggling to take any positives from that. That was a very, very difficult game to watch. But we are in the next round of it. People saying that's all that matters. I don't think I agree with that. It's not all that matters. It's the most important thing, but we've got to learn from that and avoid a repeat performance. Because if we do that again in the next round against, you know, even slightly better opposition, we're going to go out and the season's going to be over early again, and that's the last thing we want. We've got to learn from that, mate. That was terrible.
Yeah, Carl, like Lee just said, there's very few positives. What were your opinions on the game?
Yeah, similar to Lee, to be honest, Mick. Can't really push on from there. Probably the Corey and Robert Olsen played two good games. Couple of unfit players stepped in, couple of fringe players stepped in, never really set the world alight to give themselves a chance of starting in games moving forward. I didn't feel anyway. But as Lee said, we are through and we must learn from that, mistakes that we can't really let games run that far away, especially if the opposition is a little bit better than what we played yesterday.
Mark, off air, you said, you know, it's the FA Cup and this sort of things happen. In the FA Cup, you know, at least it's not a shock and we're through. Is that an excuse for the players, do you think?
No, you know what, look, I've been to, I mean, the commentator, was watching it on BT last night, was saying, you know, he rattled off a list of like the all-time worst Everton FA Cup performances, and that wasn't even on that list. You know, we got through. I saw the quote yesterday as well, our worst needs to be better than their best, and it was. You know, I've seen Everton get, you know, the Oldham game for one, you know, we got absolutely battered. Rotherham were decent, but they weren't brilliant. I mean, the goal wasn't peppered all the way through. And there's no excuses for the performance. I'm not that bothered, to be honest. And I bet your Carlo isn't either, but he's just thinking next round. And you know, as regards fringe players, you know, he knows what he wants to get rid of.
Richard, you were at the game. You know, what were your thoughts on it?
Pretty much similar to the lads. There wasn't really many positives, was there? I mean, Yorke, obviously, Dean coming back is obviously the biggest standout. You know, to get an hour under his belt after being out for 6 weeks is pretty impressive. But, you know, he was caught out a few times by Olsen, who scored the equaliser for Rotherham. And I think, as the lads have said, exactly Rotherham, they weren't causing any problems. But they were allowed to grow in confidence because that midfield just gave them the opportunity. You know, Gomez and Davies. I mean, I don't know how Gomez stayed on the pitch for so long, to be honest, because you know, he was easily one of the worst defenders and Davies wasn't far behind him. So, you know, there's a lot of things there which you look at it and you could be really critical of it. But as I have to say, you know, being through to the fourth round is probably the biggest thing you can take at this stage.
Lee, what Rich has just touched on there, Davies and Gomez in the centre midfield, in the pivot. A lot's been said about these two. You know, can they play together? Are they going to stake a claim in the starting 11? They did themselves no favours yesterday, did they?
Not at all. I don't think Decore and Allen have got much to worry about when they're back, put it that way. If you're a half-decent Premier League footballer and you see the Everton team sheet with Tom Davies and Gomez in the middle at the minute, you're confident that you're going to go into that game and have the upper hand and dominate the game for whoever you're playing for. With Tom Davies, Mick, it's another example of why if we want success at Everton, I'm struggling to see how he's going to be part of it. I'm really trying to hold back and not go over the top, because I know he's got his followers, Tom Davis, and he is an Evertonian and stuff. And to be fair, I think that gets him off the hook with a lot of people. He's too safe. When I'm watching Everton, it's noticeable for me that the top, they're not looking for him. He's not an option. He's okay at most things, but I'm struggling to think what's he excellent at? What does he excel at? Is he quick? You know, is he a combative tackler like Alan is? Does he drive forward and assist? Is he creative? I don't think he's any of those things, and it baffles me how he's got to 120 appearances around that mark for Everton. He's captained us as well. I've got nothing against the lad personally. I'm just an Evertonian who wants the best for me club, and I've seen some top players. We need better than him, and that's the fact. We need better.
Do you think, sorry mate, do you think that, like, I mean, he didn't dominate the game, but, like, do you think that there was, for either midfielder, there was any options either wide or forward?
No, Mark, with the ball? No, and I've made a couple of notes here, and I think, no, look, It was very noticeable that there was no options going forward. There was no movement in front of the midfield. Even James, when he had the ball, you could tell he was frustrated. There was nothing going on.
Well, it's interesting you say that about James, because his out ball yesterday was left.
Yeah, left.
You know, I mean, it was like, there was a player my dad used to call the Crab, and anybody, he was known as the Crab, Ray Wilkins, who was a top player, by the way. But, like, the ball was always go sideways. Mm. Now, a lot of that's because of what you've got available, you know, and Tosin didn't show anything, you know, I mean, bar the goal, and that's a big, big, big statement, saying bar the goal, you know, he didn't hold the ball. They really missed DCL yesterday, really did.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And Richarlison.
Richard.
Yeah.
Mm. Richard, just bringing it back to Gomez and Davis, neither were showing for possession enough, in my opinion, you know, from the centre-backs. They weren't tracking their runners from midfield. And they weren't really utilising the possession, you know, in a way that benefits the side and gets you a foothold in the game. There was a spell in the first half for 20 minutes where it was so scrappy. You were just screaming at the telly almost for Davis or Gomez to grab the ball and calm things down. But neither of them seem capable of doing that, are they?
Not at the moment. And that was the reason why Bovram got a foothold in the game and got some confidence, because they should have really been out of sight after Tottenham scored, and, you know, Everton should have really ramped it up. But as you say, Tom Davis, I mean, I think we've just on it there. You know, we can't doubt his commitment to Everton, but what does he bring in terms of quality? You know, he seems to be a very sort of interchangeable player, but without actually fulfilling any real role. He's sort of one of these sort of very, you know, compatible midfielder. You can put him on the wing, you put him in hold, you put him in central. But what does he do? And, you know, again, it's not unfair with Tom Davis. You know, we know he does a lot for the club. You know, he loves the club. But what does he bring in a game like that where you have got to step up? And, you know, I think Ancelotti probably will regress a little bit going with a sort of half-strength midfield, because no one good giving Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison in the afternoon off, because you've got Tosin to step up. But if you bench Decore, you've got Alan out injured, who's coming in to sort of fill the gap, because those two clearly can't do it. And again, not against them as individuals, but the quality of them is just not what Everton need or expect at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Carl, what were your thoughts on the partnership in midfield between Davis and Gomez?
Lackluster, to say the least, Mick, to be honest. Pretty much touch on what the lads have just said there. Just never took the game, did they? Never got over the game. First 10 minutes, great ball by Gordon, puts Tosin in. From then, you're thinking, okay, they dictate the pace now. And we get the ball, we get these running around, we see the game out 2-3-0. But unfortunately, I just don't think they're capable of doing that as a pair. Maybe if you put them in there with Alan and then Decore come on, Gomez done a little bit better. Felt like he probably got a bit more confident knowing that Decore was behind them. But even so, mate, it's a sad state of affairs when we can't really play football without Alan and Decore, the centre of midfield. But obviously Carlo understood that, and that's the reason why he went out and got 2 centre-mids straight away.
Lee, you feel like the midfield, you know, frailties are still there a little bit. You know, we have improved the midfield, you know, in the last window, but they're still there, aren't they? And they're still evident.
Yeah, They are, Mick, and I suppose taking a little bit more of a positive slant on things, even at 1-1 yesterday, I think in the past I'd have been convinced we were going out. You know, we were going to, you know, quote Everton this. I didn't get that feeling yesterday with Decore as an option on the bench. Even Sigurdsson, I think the difference when the pair of them came on was very evident. Sigurdsson, I know he's got his detractors and stuff, but he's got quality, he's got ability, and he does stand out against that level of opposition. Same with Decore. And when the pair of them came on, you could see the whole game changed. We managed to grab a hold of it a little bit. And I do think in extra time, we managed that game very well. There was a spell of possession, I think, in the second half of extra time where we kept hold of the ball for like 3 or 4 minutes and we had Rotherham running around. That's what should have been going on from minute one. So, yeah, I think the backup to Alan, Decore, your first choice options isn't great and we need to address that because I think you start with one of Davis or Gomez and you probably get away with it. Yesterday we saw if we start with both of them, you're not going to do that in the Premier League, certainly, anyway.
Mark, you were just going to come in there.
Well, I didn't think Sigurdsson did anything. I mean, like I can't generally remember him doing anything of quality.
I can't remember him being on Mark.
No, I can't remember his name being mentioned. He was. I mean, if you think how. I mean, Decore come on and looked. He looks a machine. You know, he looks like he can go box to box, and a lot of the qualities that you want from players coming on. You know, take the game by the scruff of the neck, gets a goal. He's all over the pitch. Like physically, he's a specimen, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? But he can also play football, and I think he smells danger as well. You know, in the short spell he's had as an Everton player, you know, he's come up with little moments where. He saved us in games. You know, he'll just turn up and just sneak the ball off somebody.
That tackle against Tottenham.
There's been two or three now.
What but a like, lovely finish that as well, by the way.
Yeah, it was, yeah. It's quality.
Great finish, yeah.
But like with Sigurdsson, I've said before, like I try and take every game and every player, you know, and think about how well they've done or how good that game was and take it by game by game. With him, consistently, just tell me what he's done. And, I'll listen, but please tell me, you know, other than floating corners in, I find it disheartening that he's still there as much as other people will say about Dave still being there.
Interesting, though.
Richard? Moving away from the centre midfield problem yesterday, you know, Cenk Tosun got a chance. He scored. It was a good finish. His second goal shouldn't have stood. That's another argument altogether. What was your opinion on his performance yesterday?
It's more of the same old from Tosun, isn't it? You see little flashes of the player he could be, and then you see for the rest of the game, you know, the player he really is. He had a few chances. He didn't really make the most of them. And, you know, he's unfortunate with the VAR. Coming in for the late goal. I mean, I think it is curious the way you can use VAR and an FA Cup third round side, but not in a Carabao Cup quarter final. But that's another discussion for another time. But I wasn't really overly impressed by him. And he really did just do the bare minimum in terms of covering the shortfall left by Richarlison and DCL. I wasn't really convinced that he could have a future at Everton. To be honest, it actually made me yearn for Moise Keane to come back.
Yeah. Lee, just touching on Tosun. In all fairness to the midfield, it is very difficult, isn't it, when you get the ball and you know, they turn out and they don't have that focal point or someone running the channels or willing to hold the ball up. And the ball wasn't sticking up there, was it, yesterday at all?
No, he's not the answer, Mick. You know, there's no getting away. It was a lovely finish. And he is a good finisher, like Richard just said there. You put him in front of goal and, you know, he's not bad. The rest of his game, though, is lacking, to say the least. Movement-wise, he's not Dominic Calvert-Lewin. He's not got that presence, the height, the strength. He's not an outball, so to speak. So, you know, the times in the game where we were struggling and we were penned back, I know that's embarrassing to say against Rotherham, but when we were penned back a little bit, he's not really that option where you can look for the channel like you can with Calvert-Lewin, and he'll run and he'll use his body strength and he'll hold it up and let us get up the pitch a little bit. He's not that. I think yesterday was a little bit of a shop window job. It was a perfect time to put him in the shop window. He's come out and said recently that he's, what did he say? He's taken 2 or 3 weeks to have a think about whether he wants to move.
Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks, yeah.
So, yeah, we'll make your mind up for you if you want, and it won't take 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah.
It'll take 24 hours.
Two or three seconds.
Interestingly, sorry, with Tolton, is that, like, I mean, back in the day, he would have had a big lad up front with him. You know, there would have been a two there, and he would have been the one all he had to do was get goals.
Mm.
And like, you know, we modern football or modern Everton, it's one man up front with five in midfield. And that probably five in midfield is like playing because you haven't got certain players of quality in certain positions. So Tolson doesn't get the opportunity. You know, Tolson up front with Calvert-Lewin might be a different player because he can't like and finish. But like on his own, you know, he hasn't got any pace. He hasn't got any physicality as well. I mean, you know, the whole thing about him, he has a bit of rough and tumble about him and all that. He's lightweight, isn't he? You know, he's not good enough.
Mm. Carl, there was unwanted extras yesterday. You know, we rest Dominic Calvert-Lewin, we rest Richarlison. But the unwanted, you know, extension of the playing time. You know, Michael Keane has just come back from a little niggle in his hamstring. He had to play 120 minutes. And, you know, we rested Decore and Sigurdsson. And they had to go on and play, you know, nearly an hour of football just before two really important away games in the space of a week. It's not what Carlo would have wanted, was it?
No, the game plan didn't go to plan, did it? We clearly see that, Mick. I don't think Decore, Sigurdsson, any of them types of players were supposed to do that long. I'd be surprised if Rodriguez was supposed to stay on for that long as well. So, yeah, the plan didn't play out the way Carlo would have wanted. You know, Wolves away on Tuesday. Very, very hard game. They're a very physical team, athletic. You know, they're not going to give us a minute. So, you know, I think what's happened there yesterday is probably one of the reasons why we might struggle with these coming up games again and a bit of tiredness might set in again. I mean, Michael Keane, for me, done very, very well yesterday, to be honest, Mick. I thought he played well again. Looked a little bit off the boil, yeah, because maybe he was a little bit rusty from being rested against West Ham, but I thought he'd done okay, personally. But it's just whether or not the players who come in, I've got any more legs left that we're supposed to be rested to get us through this next couple of games. I'm a bit concerned about that one.
Mm. Richard, what will have Carlo have learnt from yesterday's game, if anything at all?
Probably that you can't make half measures in some areas. And I think we've come back to the midfield, the base again. And obviously, you know, having to leave Hammers on for, you know, up until probably the first 5 minutes of extra time shows just how badly Everton needed a player of his quality when you've got Richarlison, DCL, even to a less degree Pickford out. So I think he'll probably, I mean, if he gets a Premier League tie in the next round, I think he's going to have to go full strength. And, you know, you can't go through, you can't just do all the good and throw the kids on and hope for the best. By the way, that's the one thing that came out of yesterday that was quite encouraging, that we didn't end up in another situation like what happened at Anfield last year, because that was by far the worst Everton performance in a cup game I've seen for a long, long time. So, you know, it just about edged that out. So I think he's going to have to really up his game in terms of selection. He can't just give players the weekend off if he's serious about winning the trophy. You know, 26 years come up to now since Everton last won the trophy. That's way too long, and you can't take the piss with your lineups.
Lee, I had a text message, Lee, yesterday from a good friend, and if Everton do get through and manage just to get over the line, it would allow us to almost not derail our season, let's say. How important was it just to get over the line and then almost regroup?
It's massive, Mick. You imagine how we'd all be feeling today, you know, and we speak on behalf of all of us as fans. You know, there's nothing worse than that feeling, and we've had it all too regularly of late, where your season's finished in January. You know, we're still in. We've got away with one. We got away with one in 1995, away against Bristol. We were absolutely appalling, and we got through, and look what happened. So it's not all negative. We are in the hat, you know, and it's a bit different this year where the fourth round and the fifth round draw is made at the same time. So we'll have a little bit of a clearer idea of the path maybe to a quarter final. So yeah, it's a massive result for us. I think you listen to pundits and they all talk about Everton as a good bet for the cup, and we should be. With everyone fit, and if we play to the way we can play, then we've got every chance. And especially if the stars align the way they should, the way they could do, and perhaps we get drawn against the team who have got a Champions League game coming up or wherever, or they've got a couple of injuries. I said it last week, you need a little bit of a luck to win a competition, but you've got to be in it, and we're still in it. So, yeah, happy day.
Yeah, Carl. Anthony Gordon got a start. I personally think he needs a loan. What was your opinion on his performance yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Mick, I was expecting a little bit more from him yesterday. I thought, you know, team of Rotherham's level, I thought, you know, this could have been a good chance for the kids to step up and really, really have a good go against these. Whether or not he felt a little bit like he was rusty himself because he's got no game time under his belt, then, yeah, I would have to agree with you, Mick. Put him out on loan and let's get him playing regularly. I do think he shows signs of ability. Certainly, he's got a lot of pace, hasn't he? He's quite a tall lad by all accounts. Maybe needs to fill out a bit, but you know, I think he could have a future at Everton. He could have a future at Everton, and by putting him out on loan, you'll get to see him playing week in, week out, regularly scoring, setting goals up, and possibly dictating games. Because I do think he's got a lot of ability. That kid.
Mark, what was your opinion on Anthony Gordon's performance yesterday?
I thought there was moments where I thought, you know, the lad's obviously got quality, and you can see why he's in and around the first team now. He disappeared second half, and that's why he got yanked with Iwobi, because the pair of them, you know, didn't show anything second half. I think he's learning his craft. You know, I think whether he learns that in and around the first team in Everton or that happens on a loan, you know, Carlo will know what's right to do with him, because he's, you know, he seems to be managing him quite well. He's now at a point where, you know, he's creating assists. And there was a lovely run he did in one of the first moments of the game where it was like I'm probably overstepping the mark here, but it was reminiscent of a George Best goal that was scored a long time ago where he cut across all two or three players. But there was twice...
Showing your age here, Mark.
Yeah, twice I was shouting at the screen, shoot. And he just didn't shoot, you know, at the time where... And I think that, like, once you get used to being around men, basically, you know, you've got to think that he's only a boy playing against men who are physically better footballers than him and also more experienced. He'll be a better player. You know, I thought he did okay.
Richard, I personally think, I don't want to compare, but you know, you look at Liverpool and they loaned out Harvey Elliott to Blackburn. I personally think that would be a really good learning curve for Anthony Gordon to go out there and probably play in the Championship week in, week out. What are your thoughts on it?
It's a tough one, really, because I'd rather see him continue his development at Everton. But obviously, you know, if that is the more realistic pathway for him in terms of getting back into the first team and, you know, having a regular run of games as he did at the back end of last season, then, you know, I'd be all for it. You know, I think Gordon, as Lord have said, you know, he just needs that sort of development, sort of physically. He's still quite slight. But, you know, I mean, if we're going to farm him out on loan somewhere, you know, we don't want to end up in a situation like we did with Kieran Dowell, where he just goes on a succession of loans and then getting flogged to a Championship club at the end of it. You know, there needs to be a clear pathway for him, and maybe, you know, Ancelotti's probably better placed than Marco Silva or Ronald Koeman was to do that with Anthony Gordon, because he clearly beats a lot. He clearly, you know, he's willing to take what he says on board. If he comes and knocks on his door and says, I'm not happy about something, he'll give him some feedback. Whereas you feel like the other two wouldn't have been that accommodating if Gordon had come into the first team around their time in charge. So for me, I think it's a good option. And I think maybe if Ancelotti is, you know, here for the long haul, which we hope, we believe he will be, then I think he's probably the best person to oversee that development. And I think it won't be just another Kieran Dowell mark to where he should be farmed out to all these clubs. And then I thought at the end of it, there might actually be a clear succession plan. And hopefully that is the case.
Lee, moving on a little bit from Anthony Gordon, James started. You know, he's had a few niggling injuries and he's been a bit of a, you know, he's been a miss, let's be honest. He started the game. He created the winner, let's be honest. You know, we had a runner from Abdoulaye Doucouré and he created the winner. But we do need to see more from him, don't we?
Yeah, we do, Mick. But with players who are at his level, you can have games like he did yesterday where, let's be honest, we can't come in on here and slate Tom Davis and whoever else and let him off the hook just because he's Hammers. He didn't do anything apart from an absolute world-class assist, and that's the difference. You know, he's arguably won us that game with that moment of magic. If I was to put myself in Hammers' shoes, I don't know whether it's a little bit of frustration creeping in where he's looking around him, you know, and the calibre of the player he's playing alongside, and you know, he's not, people who don't see his runs, people who aren't seeing what he sees, would an element of frustration creep in? Where I think you've heard top level footballers allude to this, where the like managers, where they go to lower league clubs and they find it difficult because of what they're working with. It's sort of translating that to maybe James's current performances on the pitch. I think if we can get our top men back in, so you're talking your Richarlisons, your Allans, Dean, you're back up to full fitness, and hopefully with the weather getting a little bit warmer as well, I might add, we might see James's levels come up a little bit. To me, it's no surprise that since it's got cold, he's got cold.
Carly, I didn't write that down, I'm sure you didn't. Carly did create the winner, but he created the winner with a willing runner who's willing to run beyond. Is that what James needs? He needs runners around him.
I'd like to think so, Mick. Yeah, I mean, you know, you probably played football yourself at an amateur level or a decent level between us in here. And you know, when you've got that type of player in your team, I've seen it yesterday. The amount of players that just look for James, it's unbelievable. You know, like even if he's centre mid, the courier just passes it to him, and then he'll move and he'll know he'll get it back. Do you know what I'm trying to get out of you?
Yeah.
So like, it's having that confidence of just saying, "There's Rodriguez, there's the player. He's the player who can change this game. Give him the ball, I'll move. He'll probably find me." And that's probably where it's going to whittle down to with him. We need movement off the ball with him in the team. It's a simple fact, because with his vision, with his ability, eight out of 10 times, he's going to find that pass that makes us win the game. Likewise, he did yesterday. You know, that pass to the corner was never on when he got it. He waited and waited and waited, and it was a perfect pass. He broke no stride. The corner ran right onto the ball. Bang, first touch goal. You know, we haven't had a player like that for a long, long time. So you could say Rodriguez didn't do much, and I agree with Lee on that one. Off the ball, he's a bit of non-existent, isn't he? But when we get it, he comes alive and he wants the ball. The players feel confident to give him the ball. Maybe all we need to factor in now is when he's got the ball, how quick do we move around so we can play them passes?
Lee, just rolling it back quickly. Carl's made a really good point there regarding James. You know, the players give him the ball. They feel comfortable when James is on the ball. They know he's not going to give it away. With all due respect to yesterday's opponents in Rotherham, you'd expect Andre Gomez to be grabbing that game, wouldn't you, when it was a bit, you know, for the 20 minutes in the first half where it was a real scrappy game. There's enough leaders in that team, surely now, just to grab the ball, keep it moving and just calm it down. I mean, you could hear Carlo from the bench shouting, play, play. So why weren't they doing that?
No idea, Mick. I don't know what happened yesterday. And, you know, the curious case of Andre Gomez, what's happened there? Bar the obvious with the injury, that's 12 months ago now, well, 14 months ago now, where he picked up that horrendous injury. What we've seen since is a shadow of the player that we've seen come in. The player, by the way, who was signed to replace either Xavi or Iniesta at Barcelona, I can't remember which one. He's got undoubted pedigree. He looked unbelievable when he first came to Everton, but he's playing within himself. I don't know how much of that is psychological. He looks very, very flat-footed. So anyone around him in the opposition with half a yard of pace is having a field day against Andre Gomez at the minute. He's not finding that sort of space. He's not driving forward like reminiscent to that Wolves goal that he scored. You know, we're not seeing anything of that from Gomez at the minute. So I don't know. You're asking me for answers, but I'm sure Carlo Ancelotti is looking for the same and probably expecting that when he's naming Gomez in his starting 11.
Well, he asked Gomez, didn't he, to, you know, be fitter and stronger. Yeah. Since he said that, he's going to the opposite way.
He is. He's still a player. He's a player of proven pedigree and class. whether or not he'll be the same player since that injury. I'm not sure now, Mick. I'm asking myself that question, and I'm honestly not sure.
Mark, you're looking for leaders in that team. You know, it's we were 1-0 up in the first half, and like I say, for those 20, 25 minutes, and even in the second half, you were screaming for someone just to grab the players. No one likes the word, but rally the players and almost refocus, you know, calm things down, play with a bit of professionalism. I didn't see many leaders on the pitch, did you?
No. It's a funny one, isn't it? You know, I do think with the FA Cup, though, I think players play above themselves and players play within themselves. And I think the Rotherham players, who have been crap, by the way, I mean, you know, stinking the place out, bottom of the league type stuff, all had probably the best game of football that they've had in a year or two, all in one go. You know, and that's supposedly the magic of the FA Cup, is that, like, certain players, you know, aren't up for the physical challenge and, you know, I'm not bothered with Rotherham, you know what I mean? And you could see that happen after all 20 minutes. Once they got the goal, Everton switched off.
Mm. Richard, talking of leaders, like I've touched on, there was noise from the bench shouting play, and it sounded like it was Carlo saying it, play, play. Is there any leaders in that team at the moment?
In that lineup, yes, see, there was very few. I mean, you can argue the case for obviously people like Rodriguez, who's, you know, his qualities are indisputable. You know, World Cup and blue winner, won the Champions League, won titles in two European leagues. You know, he's clearly a quality player, but in terms of, you know, teammates are going to step up and you know, alongside in the trenches, there's not really any. And I think it's interesting that we're bringing up Andre Gomes, because, I mean, I've actually been following his career for quite a bit, because I was, when he joined Barcelona, I was writing for the English channel of Marca, and they were kind of walking through the deal. And he's like, this is a ridiculous deal. It's like going to be like 75 million if he achieves all these like clauses, you know, goals, assists, trophies, you know, Ballon d'Or shots, all that stuff. And a little wonder, he really didn't kick on as many expected. And you know, some of the things happening here, the Everton goal here with the injury having that sort of impact, you know, there should be some sort of presence, even if you're not playing at your best ability, you should have that sort of confidence to sort of step up. And I mean, I think it's noticeable when you look across Stanley Park. You know, Liverpool's captain is probably one of the biggest examples of a player who's had issues with confidence, but yet he projects it to his teammates. He's got the captaincy, and, you know, he's led them to success. Everton don't seem to have many players like that who can sort of mask it. You know, there seems to be a sort of frailty there, and that's very concerning, because, you know, Calvert-Lewin's clearly got confidence to, you know, be a leader. Pickford's got it as well, although he probably does mask it a little bit more than he should. Rodriguez and Charleston. Beyond that, you know, you can look at the core, you can look at people like Tom Davis, but, you know, what they bring to the table in terms of technical ability, they're not bringing much in the way of leadership, and that's concerning, because you look at other teams, and, you know, it's just the Wolves are on the horizon in midweek. How many players in that Wolves team can you pick out who are genuine leaders? And I think you struggle to pick ones out who aren't.
Lee, I don't want to go too much into transfers. We've spoken enough about transfers in the last two podcasts, but with that sort of performance yesterday, will that force the hand of the football club to maybe open the checkbook a little bit?
Mick, I don't think we've seen anything yesterday that we probably didn't already know. I don't think it's opened our eyes up to anything new. We definitely need strengthening, and I don't think it's going to happen this month. There's not many options out there. There's no real rumours flying around. I know Ancelotti likes to keep his cards close to his chest, and he's come out and said that we're perhaps not going to do any business in January, but he has known to throw a little curveball in there every now and again, so maybe we will get a surprise. But I don't think we're going to see a Lukaku level surprise like we got that January that time. Correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was January. I don't know. January is a very, very difficult. It's a cliche now, isn't it? January is a really difficult window to get any sort of decent level of business done. And I'd be surprised if we brought anyone of note in. I think Mark mentioned it in last week. For me, it's who we get rid of. But being careful and conscious to not get rid of anyone that we can't replace, or we haven't got another option for within the current squad.
Carl, moving on, Carl, we're through to the fourth round, and that is ultimately the most important thing. So looking ahead, we have got a very, very difficult game away at Wolves on Tuesday. It's going to have to be much improved, isn't it, to go there and get a result?
Goes without saying that, Mick. I mean, obviously, we turned up like we did yesterday. It'll be an absolute rout, won't it? You know, we'll be making a mockery of ourselves in respect of challenging for the top six, because let's have it right, these are probably our rivals now, Wolves. So, you know, we've got to be beat, in my opinion, we've got to be beating teams like this. But as Richard touched on there, which I think is a massive one, they're full of leaders, absolutely full of leaders. And that's sometimes a worrying thing for Everton at the moment. We've got a leader on the sidelines within, you know, Carlo and Ferguson and Carlo's son. But, you know, there needs to be better leaders on the pitch for us. So when we go into these games, like on Tuesday, Wolves away, physical, strong, aggressive, vocal, you know, we need that in our team as well. And I don't believe we should go into the market just to get a player like that. But I believe in the summer's market, we should be looking for players like that.
Mark, Wolves are a different animal without Raul Jimenez, who's still out injured, obviously, with that horrific injury. Like Carl's just said, it is a game, especially after the result against West Ham, where we got beat. It is a result which, well, it's a game, should I say, we can't really afford to lose, can we?
Well, you know, if you want a challenge, then, or, you know, for whatever, you know, fourth, sixth, whatever, even, you know, higher than that, then you can't afford to at least get beat. You know, I'd probably take a draw, you know, going to Wolves. Was Wolves away?
Yes, Wolves away.
Wolves away. I mean, they've got, the thing about Wolves is they're a more settled side, you know, and they've got some really nice technical footballers, you know, and you look at them and you go, oh, wouldn't mind him. But they're a little bit rudderless up top as well, you know, since the striker's gone. And the young lad who's come in, obviously he's going to get a hat-trick now, I've said this.
a perfect one.
doesn't, you know, it looks like he's technically good, but, like, you know, it doesn't look like he's a sharpshooter that's going to sort of, you know, help them challenge to do anything. It's a difficult one. You know, you could see any you know, any result happening. It's interesting. You know, every time we play it like this, like, you would, I thought the same against Chelsea, against Arsenal. You know, oh, it's going to be difficult here.
Yeah.
And in the end, you know, we came out okay. So I definitely think Alan will play. You know, I think he'll be straight back in there. Because of, you know, the what we're talking about then, about the qualities he gives, leadership qualities, you know, some of the things he does, just he's a dog around the pitch, isn't he? You know, he goes hunting for the ball, but also technically he's got quality as well. You know, he can play further up the pitch.
Richard, there is rumours that, you know, Alan could be fit for Tuesday. Are you expecting, obviously, the likes of Richarlison, DC, Alan obviously to come back in? With them coming back in, what sort of style are you expecting us to play? Are you expecting us to play the style that, you know, we got really good results against the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal, where we sat in a little bit more? Or are you expecting us to be a little bit more expansive and actually take the game to Wolves?
I think being the away team, I think you've got to sit in and you know, hope to hit them on the break. I mean, you know, that's the sort of the Ancelotti blueprint when you come up against a team that can be a little bit dangerous, like Wolves are. I mean, I know that in mid-table now, but, you know, if they get the win against Everton, that then puts them back in contention in for those European pieces. So I think he's going to have to really dig in and really sort of, you know, be mindful that, you know, this isn't another West Ham who, you know, you can just take lightly, because as we saw with the West Ham game, that blew up in the face. You know, we need to see something a bit more from Everton. That's the past two games, and yeah, okay, it was a half-strength team in the FA Cup, but, you know, the past two games and the performances that were produced were so far below what we come to expect under Ancelotti this season. And, you know, I think it was quite telling in extra time. He wasn't even... it was almost like he sort of just thought, well, you know, if you go out, it's on you, basically, because he didn't actually value the troops, which I found quite strange, so watching it from the press box. I thought, why is he not, you know, drilling him into, you know, do this, do that? But obviously, you know, the bigger priority is in the league, and, you know, Wolves are going to be a tough opponent, and, you know, in a season where anything can happen, they beat Arsenal already, you know. We'd be having it if we don't tighten up. And, you know, I probably would switch probably to left back again. I think centre back experiments yesterday didn't really work. Obviously, you accommodated in yet. I'd put him at left back because he has been absolutely spectacular there lately.
Lee, looking ahead to Wolves, like we say, That's a good point by Richard. Would you maybe put Godfrey back in there? Because we are probably going to expect to have less of the ball and to be a bit more defensive and then try and hit him on the break. Or would you play Dina in this one?
No, I'm with Richard very much on that one. I think Dina showed yesterday he's not quite fit yet. You know, he's got good time under his belt, but I would put Godfrey back in. And oh my, it's going to be like it's going to be more like a UFC battle with Traore. putting him left back against Godfrey. That's something I think I'd pay to see separately, other than the game itself. But it's a tough game. But we've proven, Mick, we've proven that we can raise our game at times, perhaps when we were not expected to as well. And it's one of these games, perhaps similar to the Leicester game away as well, where I fancy us on Tuesday. I think yesterday we'll have given a few of them a right kick up the backside. I think we'll see changes. We'll see some of the people we've been really missing come back in. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if Ancelotti did the job on these and we come away with a win on Tuesday. I'm actually quite confident.
Carl, Lee's confident. We love optimism here, mate. We do love it. What is your prediction?
Yeah, I'm confident myself, to be honest, Mick. I think if we get that formation right and, you know, touching on that Godfrey one there, yeah, I don't think he's a left-back, by the way. Luca Dean is an outstanding player, but I think it's a bit too early for him to be playing. Other than that, I would play Godfrey myself. So going on the back of that, I'm going to say 2-1 to Everton.
2-1 to Everton. Sorry, Lee, what was your prediction for the game?
I'm going to go 1-0, mate.
1-0. Mark, prediction?
No, Izzy, I'm not doing predictions. I'm too old for predictions.
Richard, prediction?
2-1, I'm going to say, just because I can see them scoring.
Okay, 2-1. And I'm going to go 1-1. 1-1. Okay, moving on, guys. Richard, you were at the game yesterday. We've had a lot of questions come in regards to what it is actually like now, obviously, COVID's involved. Can you tell us a little bit about what it's like for yourself going in and reporting on the game?
Yeah, it's as you can imagine, it's quite a strange situation now. I mean, we used to have a sort of quite a structured match day in terms of obviously written press. You go in it 3 hours before kickoff, sit down, have a pre-match meal, do some prep, and about an hour before kickoff, you get the team news, see if anything happened in the warm up, do the game half time, full time, then you do the post match, and then the mix zone if you had access to it. Well, that's gone now. As you can imagine, it's now getting an hour before kickoff, if not a little bit earlier. You can't leave your seats. You're all in socially distanced specs. I think I'm actually, you know, when Everton Lee puts some for Bramley Moors off, I think I'm going to be torn which seat I want from the main stand, because I've spent as much time in the actual fan part than I have in the press box these days, because I'm in this little sort of makeshift desk. But it is a very strange experience, and, you know, when the fans came back, that gave me hope that normality might be on its way. And it was great having the fans back, because it just gave some life to the games. I felt like not even like under 23 games, because you didn't even have fans at Rosen before lockdown. So it's been very strange. And, you know, you haven't sat there waiting for the managers to appear on Zoom, and, you know, people, you know, 200 miles away in London asking questions, and you're thinking, hang on, this what's happening, you'd be here, and there's no way in hell you'd ask that question. So it's affecting a lot of, you know, how people do the job, how they operate, how they think, you know, and it's a very strange thing to be a part of. You know, I don't know how many things we've actually covered now, but I think, you know, my 500th game as a journalist is going to come and close doors with no fans, which I could not have imagined, you know, over a decade ago when it started. So all in all, it's been surreal, and it's something that will definitely stay with me.
You just touched on the fans there. When the fans came back, you felt like it made a difference. We've had another question come in where people have asked, even those 2,000 fans that came, and I know Lee and Carl were lucky enough to be drawn out of the ballot on a game, how important was it for the players to have those 2,000 fans, and how much of a difference do you think it makes?
I thought it made a massive amount, and I think, no, the fact that City of Liverpool had home advantages, the only two Premier League clubs, while it lasted, was absolutely significant. You know, you look at the results against Arsenal, against Chelsea. I mean, Man United was obviously, you know, not great, and obviously everything that happened after that, and that was the last time fans were in the ground. But while they were in, it really did feel like it brought some meaning back to games. You know, sort of it wasn't just like going for the motions, because these teams, I mean, you know, it's great hearing the players talk, it's great hearing James Coleman giving an out to opponents who were trying to act a big man. But, you know, you'd say that all in a heartbeat just to hear, you know, a full Goodison going on Zed cars as they come into the ground. You give that, you know, to them to have a game like yesterday's one, actually, to have the fans getting on your back and saying, this is not good enough. I think that would have made a huge difference for Everton. And I think you saw it against the West Ham game. You know, there wasn't that sort of verbal kick with the backside. And I think that has been a big loss. And, you know, since obviously we've been in the tier three here in Liverpool, we've lost that. But also now, you know, it's a level playing field again. And, you know, it benefits some football more than others. I think Everton on the wrong end of that one.
Lee, just touching on what Rich has just said there regarding the fans, and with no fans there yesterday, you know, you kind of probably Everton players go into a bit of a lull, so to speak. Is again, I don't want to make excuses for the players because I'm not impressed with the performance just as much as any of you guys, but is that another thing that you can take into account?
Yeah, you know, I can't articulate it, you know, better than Richard's just done there. I think he's got the nail on the head. Yesterday is a game where I think it could have gone either way. I think Goodison would have been very flat yesterday. It's like an early lunchtime kickoff, that low sun. We never seem to play well, by the way, when the conditions are like that. I don't know why. But yeah, I think it got that bad at one point yesterday. I think Goodison Park would have went nuts and it would have been pretty nasty in there yesterday, and it would have give one or two a little bit of a fright and frightened them into action, maybe. Everyone's in the same boat, don't forget, but Goodison Park's very unique. We've all been there. We all love it. We've all experienced it. And when, I don't know, something happens, that Phil Neville tackle, whatever it is that sparks Goodison into life, you can't not miss that, Mick. And that day when you get that green light to all go back and just experience that again can't come quick enough for me. And I'm sure the players are feeling it as well. It's such a strange environment. I know I certainly found it to be very strange, quite unsettling actually. When I went to the Arsenal game, I think Carl, we spoke off air, I think you found it the same. It's just very odd. And if we're finding it weird, obviously these guys, these elite Premier League players at Everton, they're used to playing in front of full houses and stuff. They must miss that. So the sooner it comes back, the better. Mm-hmm.
Carl, you were lucky enough to get a ticket in the ballot when fans were allowed. I know you were not a fan of it. You said it was a bit odd and it felt probably a bit like an exhibition game. But how important is it for the players, for fans to get back in?
Massively, Mick. I mean, you know, the two lads there have hit the nail on the head, like Lee said then. When I went to the United game, unfortunately, that was the game I won the ballot in. I wish I never won it. It was -5 as well. It was absolutely freezing. But, yeah, I mean, even to the fact that, like, when we were in the ground, we were getting up and, you know, you get up and, you know, there's a chance and you jump up and you, like, clap your hands and you're like, hey, you sing a song or something, you're getting told to sit down. You know, put your mask on. Like, you know, okay, you know, I understand the protocol, I get it, do you know what I mean? I got it, but I didn't expect it to be the way it was. And like Lee said there, you know, that could have, we could have helped the players, and the players got to help the fans. And I think when there's no synergy there with no fans, and the players feel it, the fans are feeling the players aren't feeling the fans shouting and chanting because they can't, then yeah, it's a clusterfuck, innit, waiting to happen. So as soon as we get these fans back in, mate, the better, 100%.
Mark, what are your thoughts on it? Do you think it's a, again, I don't want to use the word excuse, but is it, you know, is it hard for the players to get up for certain games when there's no fans and there's no atmosphere and they're expected to win the game anyway?
I'm not too sure how much of a difference, obviously, to the atmosphere, but to the result it makes as regards. I've been there when, you know, the Gladstones turned on players and they shrink, they fall apart, like, you know, and there's been games where, to be honest, like Rotherham, do you know what I mean? Yesterday, it would have been just as bad. Do you know what I mean? I think it's been mentioned that these have been on the case.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, they probably shrunk even more. You know, I'm just taking the win at the moment.
Okay, guys, that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you ever so much for tuning in. Richard, you've been fantastic. Thank you ever so much for being our special guest.
Cheers, Richard.
Shout out to Lewis Wright, who is age 10. You're our youngest listener, mate. So thank you ever so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Next podcast is Wednesday, which is the day after the Wolverhampton Wanderers away game. And then next Sunday, we have another very, very special guest joining us. Ex-player Michael Ball will be joining us. And you'll be able to hear that from 1 p.m. on Sunday. And we're delighted to have Michael joining us. Guys, in the meantime, take care. Look after yourselves. Like I say, we know it's a tough time out there. So our DMs are always open if you ever need a chat or you just like to talk about the Blues. In the meantime, let's hope we are talking on Wednesday after a good result at Wolves. Thank you all. Take care. And we'll speak to you soon.
Up the fucking toffees.